Good morning, friends. It's Friday with Jim here on Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, ably assisted by Kate Brister on the engineering board. Thanks for being with us, Kate. Terry Wilson is occasionally the engineer as well, and he can't be with us today. Really happy to be visiting today with Brad Johnson. Once again, Brad, we've done this before. Brad is the Astoria Chief of Police, and today actually happens to be the acting city manager, since Brett Estes is out of town. Brad, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Jim. It's great to be here. You know, I was listening to your intro theme, and I every time I hear that, I think of Cafe Uniontown, and it sounds like something that would have been playing in there while you were having dinner.
Well, that's because that tune we played every time we played at Cafe Uniontown. It's a tune entitled Blue Bossa. And the trio that we had at the time, myself on guitar and Spud Siegel on mandolin and Jim Yitzde on bass.
Familiar names.
Yeah, we really enjoyed playing that tune. It's a wonderful tune to play. Kenny Dorham wrote the tune, and it's become a jazz standard. And and so when I started doing the show, I needed a theme song, and being, you know, kind of modest, I decided to feature my own guitar playing.
But I did not know that was you.
Yeah, and but anyway, happy to have you with us again, Brad. Before we get started, I'd like to have you tell us a little bit about your brief history of your life in 5 minutes or less.
5 minutes or less, the history of my life, huh? Well, I'm an Oregon boy, kind of. I was born in Spokane, Oregon, but I really, after about sixth grade or so, we moved to Portland. Grew up in Portland, graduated from high school, Clackamas High School, and then kind of toured the country, first trying college and then the military. Did 3 years in the United States Army. They trained me as a correctional specialist, and in the Army's wisdom, they sent me to a base with no jail. So I was stationed at Fort Dix, New Jersey. They gave me on-the-job training to make me a police officer, a military police officer, and I got the bug, kind of, if you would, and really enjoyed that kind of an environment. And Fort Dix was an open post. We had two state highways going through it, and a pretty robust community there as well. So got a lot of experience working there, becoming a supervisor in that environment as well. And got out of the Army and thought, you know, this is what I want to do. Found a job in New York City working for Amtrak at Penn Station. And went to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. Thought this was wonderful, and then I started working in New York City and said, this is horrible. and didn't last very long in New York City. By choice, I decided that was not the life for me, and went home to where my parents were in Yakima. Met the love of my life while I was trying college the second time. Ended up marrying my wife, Cindy. Give a little plug for Bank of the Pacific, where she's a branch manager. At the best local bank. she and I got married there, had our oldest son, and just after he was born, I mean days after he was born, and we just bought a new house, I got a letter from Astoria PD asking if I was still interested in the job I'd applied for the year earlier. Came back down, interviewed for the job as police officer here in Astoria, and that was in 1992. I ended up being successful there, came back to this community, and really have had a charmed life here in Astoria. I got to be first a police officer, then I worked as a DUI enforcement officer, which is a grant-funded position we had for a while. Became a detective, worked as a detective for a couple of years downtown. Was really a different place then, and we had some pretty significant crime issues in Astoria and really big perceptions of crime issues in Astoria. Got to do some fairly progressive work during those 2 years that I was the detective. Went back to patrol for about 6 months and then became a sergeant. Worked at that for a while before I was promoted to deputy chief. Was deputy chief for 2 years, and while I was doing that, I was honored to be able to go to the Senior Management Institute in Policing in Boston and really get some advanced level experience in strategic thinking and similar topics. And then in November, Chief Curzon announced that he was going to retire rather suddenly. He had decided it was his time, that he was going to ride off into the sunset, and he did. Was interim for about a month, and then was fortunate enough to be appointed as chief by City Manager Brett Estes. And then they really surprised me and asked if I'd be the assistant city manager as well.
Where's Curzon now?
He's back in Riverside, California, where he came from, enjoying life. Last I heard from him, he was restoring an early 70s Chevy pickup and just having the time of his life.
Yeah. So you administer the Astoria Police Department. How many officers are in that department now?
We've got 16 sworn police officers, 15 right now because we have a vacancy. Those are arranged in our primary bulk of those officers are in the patrol division. That's a dozen of our officers are in there. We just promoted a deputy chief. Eric Halverson will be the new deputy chief. He has been away this week at training, the middle management training that was already scheduled for him. Really looking forward to getting him back in that deputy chief role and taking some things off of my plate.
Yeah, I know Eric. He's good people.
He is quality. And I've known Eric since he was 16 years old and hanging around, or I guess 18 years old, and was a police cadet.
Not only that, he's tall.
He's very tall. And when he was 18, he was a lot skinnier.
So a while back, you actually ended up as acting city manager as well as police chief, wearing kind of two hats at once. How did you find the difference between those two management positions?
One of the things I like to call that assistant city manager role is kind of community policing on the executive level. It really forces you to think about global issues on a day-to-day basis as well as while you're temporarily in that assignment. It does require you to think, how does this affect the other aspects of city government as you're going along? And I think right now we're at a unique, well, not unique, but a good time in Astoria history. Our department heads have a great deal of inner workings that are very positive. I can't remember a previous time in my history with the city of Astoria where those departments work so well together. There's no bickering. There's no fighting for resources. It's really a cooperative environment right now.
You must be remembering Ben Shaw.
You know, we were just talking about Ben Shaw yesterday, and that was at the very beginning of my career that he left the city. So, no, but there have been times since then that the working relationship between the departments was not nearly as good.
Yeah. You know, I forgot, but Terry Wilson had a question kind of beside the point about the paint scheme on the Astoria police cars. How is that determined? I mean, who decides how you're going to paint the police cars?
Well, there's kind of a joke that police chiefs come in and they won't leave until they've done a couple of things. One is change the badge, change the patch, and change the graphics on the cars. So that has been fairly true for us. In the late 80s, we had kind of a mishmash of medium blue to dark blue. There was kind of a crazy... we didn't have matching police cars even, I don't think, at that point. When I started, there was still a little bit of that going on. And then we got to the point where everybody's cars on the North Coast matched. So if you were looking just from a distance, you couldn't tell an Oregon State police car from a Warrenton police car, from a Seaside police car, from an Astoria police car. So that started to differentiate. We went to the navy blue cars. We had our large star on the side, kind of very basic graphics. That changed over the years a couple of times. We got to, just before Rob Dupree left, we had a fairly, Andrew Randall, who's one of our officers, is a former graphic, in a previous life, he was a graphic artist. He actually designed a graphic that we had on our cars at that point. And it was pretty bright. We had navy blue cars, light blue and white graphics on the side. One day we took delivery of a new Tahoe, and it was out back, hadn't gotten the graphics yet, and Chief Curzon walked out and said, I kind of like the way it looks that way.
Hmm.
So we never put graphics on that car, and for several years we didn't have any graphics on our cars. I guess 2 or 3 years ago, we actually put out several opinions, like different examples of what we might do with our police cars. Most of them were black and white. And we did not get really positive input from either the community or the officers, and actually less positive from the officers than from the community. Got some mocking comments about it looking like Shamu and some other things like that. And ended up settling kind of on this current scheme. Unfortunately, Warrenton actually decided they were going to go to almost the exact same thing that we've gone to. So now we're back to this situation where it's really kind of hard to differentiate the cars from each other. We might change that again. I have some ideas there, and I guess I'm going to follow along with this traditional joke. But one of the things I've seen recently is there's an outfit in California that they have decided the branding their city is very important. And they decided to do something really controversial, and they don't have police in large letters on the side of their cars like most agencies. They have the name of their city in big letters, and police is in smaller letters because they think it's very important for people to know this is the Astoria Police Department, if you would, not some other police department. And they take a great pride in that. I'm kind of charmed by that approach, and we're not going to do it this year, but we may start transitioning to something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, as police chief and having come up basically through the ranks, it gives you an opportunity to see different segments of society, different types of the way that people go about their lives.
Right.
And I'm wondering how you would differentiate some of those groups. I'm thinking of the homeless population in Astoria. How have you seen that change over time?
We really have a fairly significant drug and alcohol problem in our homeless group right now, more so than I think I've seen in the past. We have always had a fair amount of mental health issues in our homeless population, I'd say. But currently, there seems to be an awful lot of drug and alcohol abuse in that group.
Now, I'm wondering, the drug of choice for these folks would be amphetamines of some sort?
You know, we're seeing more, this isn't really towards the homeless population at this point, but in general, opioids is by far the most abused drug these days. And in my humble opinion, it seems to be that this is a direct result of I don't know about over-prescription, but people becoming very addicted to their prescription pain pills that are opioid-related. The Oxycontin, oxycodone, those kinds of things. At some point, when you're addicted to those drugs, heroin becomes less expensive and easier to get. And we do see a fair amount of transition from that prescription drug over to illicit drugs. And it's really a horrible addiction to have, very difficult to kick, and much more damaging than many of the things we fought in the past.
Hmm. Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. The Friday show was instigated by Lisa Smith. And Lisa, we thank you for doing that one day down at the cafe. And happy to be visiting today with Brad Johnson, Astoria Police Chief, and today, Acting City Manager. Brad, happy to have you with us.
It is great to be here.
Now, I'm curious, some of the other problems that you see in Astoria, comparing them, there have been a lot of media attention to various police departments lately. I'm thinking of Ferguson, of course, and recently Baltimore, and the way that the police react and interact with different segments of their society. that's not a problem that we seem to have here in Astoria, but I wondered if you could kind of talk about that interrelationship between the police and the people that they're policing.
Right. That's a tough problem, especially in larger agencies. One of the interesting things about this time in history is when I came to Astoria in 92, it was just post Rodney King. And at that point, those kind of national issues were not as focused. We weren't seeing like these hot spots throughout the country. It was very much related to LA. But those issues in Los Angeles affected us here in Astoria. People were talking up to us about those issues and really superimposing their views of LAPD on Astoria PD.
Yeah.
We're not seeing that this time. We are having those conversations about these national issues and some very healthy conversations about those national issues, but we don't see our community imposing those things they're seeing nationally on us locally. And we see that in a couple of different ways. We know that our current relationships with our community are much like Congress's ratings, where nobody trusts Congress, but they all like their congressperson. It's much the same when people are asked about their police departments, where they trust their local police department, but those other departments have problems. And I'm sure that part of that is this movement to the community policing era in the last 20 years. People feel like they know who their police are. They know the local police officers. In Astoria, they see them in the grocery stores. They see them at the baseball games. They see them all over their community. So they know that officer and as a result have some sense of trust with that officer. But when you look at a national level, they see these horrible things going on nationally and think they can't trust the police. And that creates an interesting opportunity for us because we can really build those deep relationships here and hopefully affect the perception of policing nationally as well.
Interesting way to look at it. What other problems do you encounter that are kind of specific to Astoria or the North Coast?
I think the tourist community that we're becoming is changing some things about Astoria. And this summer, I think it's going to be worse than most because of all the road closures. We're seeing traffic issues that are just incredible to us right now. And I think this summer, I anticipate it being a difficult summer for us. We're going to see an increase in crashes. We're going to see an increase in people with road rage issues. Very interesting thing there. And then we have issues of becoming this tourist community and people wanting us to push aside those things that are less attractive about Astoria. We talked about the homeless earlier. A lot of people don't want to see the homeless. They want them moved. They don't want them to beg. And that's a problem for the police department because begging is a constitutionally protected activity.
Right.
We can't go out and say, don't ask people for money. We can say, don't ask people for money in a way that's threatening, but we can't just move people aside and do what I guess NYPD got really famous for was when they had the convention come in, they moved the homeless out of town. We're not going to be doing those things. We're going to be trying to connect those people with resources and try to help them, but we can't just put them in the back of a paddy wagon and shovel them off someplace. So those are kind of unique things that we're dealing with in Astoria. And then scarce resources. As we transition from industry-based economy to a tourist-based economy, Oregon doesn't have a way to capitalize on tourism for the local community. We will see businesses increasing their income. We'll see those kind of trickle-down things, but we can't capitalize on those tourists coming through as government to fund additional activities. So we remain at the same staffing we've been since you were on the budget committee a decade ago.
Yeah.
We have not increased our staffing except through grants temporarily since Ballot Measure 5.
Right.
And that will be a continued problem for us, especially as we're more successful in marketing Astoria. Getting those resources to increase services is going to be difficult.
So if I hear what you're saying, Brad, the increase in tourist traffic and the general increase in activity around Astoria kind of would need additional police? Is that what we're...
We are more active by far. The trend for our calls for service is nothing but up.
Ah.
And that has implications. When we look at self-initiated activity, our self-initiated activity, those officers out and being proactive with things, is going down. And that's because they have less free time to go out, especially during daytime hours, to go out and be proactive.
So those, it cuts into your ability to do community policing then.
It does.
Yeah, because you're so busy.
So each contact then becomes a very important time to actually make those relationships. And we need to focus on each and every one of those times we're contacting the public and not wait for that special opportunity to be engaged in community policing.
And then one of the other aspects of dealing with the increased tourism on the North Coast is it's on the North Coast. So that, to me, implies that you interact with other police agencies, the state police, the county sheriff, the Warrenton police, for example. How do those interactions get set up, and how do they really work?
You know, we are fortunate in the North Coast that we have great working relationships with the other law enforcement agencies. I don't think any one of us could do our job without the allied agencies that are out there to help us. We hand off pretty seamlessly between those agencies. You'll see Warrenton police officers in Astoria sometimes, Astoria police officers in Warrenton sometimes. Those relationships are very good. They have to be, because that's the way we do our business. And they're good enough that my son is actually over in Warrenton now as a police officer. So we have to have a good relationship between Warrenton and Astoria, because there's that father-son thing there we have to keep.
Yeah. Going. Well, do you guys like train together and stuff?
We have not yet. Well, I take that back. He's in his second week as a police officer there. So he comes home at night and we kind of talk about his day. And I'd be a failure as a parent if I don't give him little pointers here and there, and we talk about things at home. It's a very interesting conversation at our house, probably unlike many others.
So since he's working for Warrenton and you're the police chief here, how can you differentiate between the two agencies?
As far as?
Just how do they, how is it different the way that you go about policing business here or in Warrenton?
Well, I think Warrenton has, we deal with a scarcity of resources in Astoria. Warrenton, I'll make a plug for my good friend Matt Workman over there, is dealing with an even more scarce resource.
Right.
They have, let's see, Tyler made the 12th officer, no, I'm sorry, 11th officer in Astoria, in Warrenton. And they have this daytime population that is significant and a square footage or square mileage to deal with that is massive. When you think about that distance between Hammond out to the airport, they've got a lot of ground to cover.
Well, I think that physically that they're one of the largest cities in Oregon just by square footage.
Absolutely.
So that gives them a lot of area to patrol. Is there any difference in the types of police calls that one would find in Warrenton as opposed to Astoria?
I think you'll see very similar activities on our logs. You'll see a little more, most likely, retail theft from them because they're becoming the retail service area for our
right.
North Coast.
And I'm also curious about, and for example, in Seaside. Now, do you guys go down and help out the Seaside police when they have a big weekend, for example, the volleyball thing? And
we
have 10 or 20,000 people there in town.
Right. We have not much. 4th of July, I think we've been down a couple of times. If they have an emergency, we certainly go down. Major crimes, Seaside, Astoria, The Sheriff's Office and Oregon State Police really comprise the major crime team, and we will work together quite well then. Part of the problem with going down and helping out is, for instance, their volleyball weekend is our Crab Festival weekend.
I got you.
So we're not sending anybody down there for volleyball unless they have an emergency, because we're pretty busy up here with Crab Festival. And that's starting to really become overlapping on so many weekends that it's putting a lot of pressure on there.
I'm curious, looking to the future, what kind of changes would you be interested in implementing in Astoria? Changes within the department, changes within the way you go about doing your policing business?
That is a great question. I got, during the budget process this last week, I was asked the question, what would I do if I had 10% more in my budget? And, you know, that question is an interesting question because it comes down to people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's going to end up with. Our budget is 85-90% people. So then you start looking at how you would arrange the department differently if you had more people. What activities would you engage with if you have more people? And I would have a great deal of caution in doing that because I don't know that we have the support to do that next different thing. Hmm. And I would never pull out of my own brain, this is the thing we need to do, because we've done that. Back in the late 90s, I was able to figure out a way to reorganize our schedule to figure out how to free somebody up. And we were able to free up one of our sergeants, put him in as a detective sergeant, and then free up the detective to go play along with the task force. That lasted little over one year, and the next budget year we lost that position that we'd managed to free up. And that told me an important lesson. Before you start doing a new activity, you really need to make sure you have both the political support and the support from the community.
Right.
Because if you're doing something that doesn't have that support and isn't a priority for the community or the political leaders in the community, you're going to lose that resource most likely because it doesn't have the support to sustain that activity. So one of the things I really am looking forward to, and I'm in the process right now of trying to find some resources to fund it because I don't think we have the time to do it with staff hours, is doing some kind of a strategic plan, figuring out what has support for the next 3 to 5 years and identifying those things that we ought to be engaging in that we're not engaging in now, figuring out what opportunities are out there, what threats are out there to us, and figuring out where to best apply all of the resources we have. So that, I think, is that strategic planning is the next thing that I want to add. And then based on that strategic plan, we'll figure out where we're going next. Because all winds blow the right direction if you don't know where you're going to go. And I'd like to know where we want to go.
You know, something that's been getting a lot of mention in the press are these little cameras that police departments are starting to wear. The technology has allowed incredible video from a thing the size of a pencil eraser, darn near. Do you use them, or do you anticipate the need to use them? And what do you think about that technology?
I think it is a good technology. I am worried that many people see it as a cure-all, and it will never be a cure-all. Part of the problem with video is it's not going to show everything. It's not going to show the same perspective that the officer had. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes will show more than what the officer sees, because if you're filming in 1080p and the officer in diminished light can't see everything that's being seen by the camera, it very much changes the perspective.
Yeah. Well, so do you guys have video cameras in your cars?
We do. We've had video cameras in the cars since the early 90s. We started out with a VHS compact camera strapped to a suction cup on the dash with a little monitor on it, real cheesy kind of things. And we went to things that had vaults in the trunk and real professional kind of cameras. We currently have a good digital audio system in all of our marked patrol cars. The budget committee just approved a budget that will allow us to replace those five because we have come to the end of life of those cameras. get us ample storage and move towards body cameras. We've been in the process for the last, probably 10, 11 months of trying to select the body camera and the replacement video cameras, hoping to find a vendor that will provide both, because there's a fair amount of efficiency if we can have one back-end system to manage all that data.
But if you have a little camera on your vest, the way I've seen them, where is there another part of it that's located where it records and stores data?
It depends on the unit you're using. For instance, the ones the sheriff's office are using have little cameras that attach to their lapels or their eyeglasses or their ball cap. Those kind of cameras have a storage device that is then worn on the belt in the pocket, something like that. The cameras we're looking at probably going with, the leading candidate at the moment, is worn on the chest, and it's all one piece. It's a little larger, probably the size of a cigarette pack and a half.
Yeah. Well, it's been really great talking with you, Brad, but unfortunately we're coming to the end of Friday with Jim here on Coast Community Radio. And Kate, thanks for working with us again today. And Brad, thanks for being with us. Now, I'd like to urge our listeners to stick around for Albert Smith and, as always, wonderful Friday Folk Show. Talk to you next week. Thank you.